You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
We still have a lot to go, and yeah, we're getting ready to start something. Nobody does that better with our next guest here inside the Dog Bowl as we get you back on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. We say hello to Scott Petrak, who does a terrific job on the Browns beat. Veteran beat writer, Elyria Chronicle Telegram. You get him on Twitter, at Scott Petrak. What's going on, Scotty?
Hey, nothing. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
We're terrific. Matt and I had been really getting into some of the conversation you initiated with Mike Pettine during his get-together with the media today. All right. Our antenna went up with regard to all the Barkevious Mingo conversation. You ask him a couple of the questions with regard to it. So is Mike Pettine telling us that right now he and the staff like Mingo's ability in coverage better than as an edge pass rusher?
Well, I don't know if you can say that completely, but the fact is they like him dropping better than the other two choices, Kruger and Sheard, and they've made the decision to have him drop more than pass rush. We asked the outside linebacker coach last week about why Mingo only doesn't have a sack, and he said it's because we're not asking him to do that. We're asking him to drop in coverage. So the fact is if they thought Mingo could get to the quarterback consistently, which you'd hope for from a number six pick,
mm-hmm.
then you'd have him rushing the quarterback because that's more important than covering whatever he's doing, whether it's a back or tight end. Getting to that quarterback is more important, but they've chosen to use his athleticism to drop in coverage, which is surprising because he was such a high pick and because he showed a little bit of that ability to rush a passer last year.
So to be very clear, and again, Mike Pettine alluded to it in his conversation with the media as well, is Barkevious Mingo is first out of the three as a dropper, but third out of the three as a rusher, correct?
Yeah, I mean, he said that for sure about the coverage. He didn't list who he likes better as a pass rusher.
Are we left to just assume?
Yes. And he said we like Mingo as a covered guy and as a pass rusher. But the fact is, the other two guys, I think, are playing more on third down. They're asked to line up at the line of scrimmage and go get the quarterback. So, you know, and it is still a small sample size. He pointed out that Mingo was dealing with the shoulder injury, which kept him out of week two. You know, and especially coming off the strong preseason he had. I mean, Mingo opened some eyes in training camp, so I think we all expected more sacks to start the year, and they haven't been there yet. And I think we're looking for the reason, and the reason is they're asking him to drop in coverage more, and that's for the variety of reasons. They like him doing that, but they also like Kruger and Sheard as those pass rushers.
All right, Scott Petrak, that having been said, if we put out there for discussion right now, and as you said, there have been some mitigating circumstances, but we're going into four games in mm-hmm. to his sophomore year, his second year in the NFL. The fact that Barkevious has not yet developed any other move that can complement his outside edge rush and that he struggled with over-pursuing in the run game from the opponents
right.
and at times chasing from behind, bad tackling angles – would you classify that right now as, or do you, a disappointment in terms of his growth and development?
Yes. And a lot of times it's because of where you draft a guy, right? I mean, if he were a no-name, or not a no-name, but if he was a second or third-round pick, you know, okay, he's got growing pains, and, you know, maybe he'll get better. But there's such a spotlight when you're the number six pick that you expect 8, 10, 12 sacks. I mean, guys like Alden Smith come into the league and immediately have huge impact, even if they're only playing
Vaughn
on third
Miller
down.
Is another
exactly.
great example of
right.
that.
Exactly. And by draft position alone, that's what you could expect from – that's what you'd hope for from a Mingo. And, you know, he had the three sacks, boom, 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 last year and then tailed off. We haven't seen it yet this year. And what's disappointing is that he has a lot of athleticism. I mean, he's gifted. He stands out on the field and you notice – Barkevious Mingo, yet it hasn't translated consistently enough to Sundays.
I agree. And again, that's something I think, as I've talked all segment and all show, really is just about coaching. You know, Barkevious Mingo needs to be dedicated to his craft. Otherwise, a guy like him, as the sixth overall pick, right. surprising as is, will not get extended, will not be re-signed here in Cleveland, and maybe land somewhere else and be out of the league sooner than later because those guys get paid a significant amount of money, and mm-hmm. you get drafted extremely high to put pressure on the quarterback. That being said, Scott, our number one, you know, issue all week has been talking about the Tennessee Titans, and for us is our Mailbag Wednesday number one topic was, is this a must win? And Michael will get to his point about how he perceives it. Myself and Nathan thought it was a must win. We'd like you to weigh in on that question.
Well, I guess if the goal is reaching the postseason, then it's a must win for two reasons. It should be a winnable game. Tennessee is not a great team. They're flawed. They're coming off a terrible game. They have a quarterback who's coming off an injury and has not proven anything in this league yet. So it's definitely a winnable game. The Browns are coming off a bye. And not only that, it starts a stretch, and I know Mike Pettine doesn't want to focus on it, but it starts a stretch of games where the Browns will either be favored or awfully close to being favored. And if that's the case, I don't remember a 5 or 6 game stretch like this for the Browns in a long time where they're going to be at the most, maybe a 3-point dog to Pittsburgh at home at the most.
Yeah.
So that means there's 5 or 6 winnable games. And if you're going to be relevant in late November and December, you have to be above the 500 mark, which means in the next 5 games, you got to go 4-1 or 3-2, and that has to start Sunday.
Yeah. You know, Scott Petrek, our guest here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. So glad all of you are in touch with us. Scotty, my only thing with that, I don't like to, and I know Mike Pettine said it perfectly about that's more for media and fans to discuss. The only thing with me is that if you, as a coach, you can't sell that too hard to your football team. Number one, I don't think anybody's buying it anyway, not those 53 guys in the room. But again, it's okay, so you sell it at that in week 4, and certainly it's not going to mathematically eliminate you from anything. And so you run yourself into issues, I think, where almost like, okay, where do we go from here now then?
Yeah, no.
So that's all I mean. Now, should they win this football game? You're damn right they should win this football game, and you're right about being relevant. It's just I like to back off on that, you know, especially this early in the season. But, of course, it's a game that – for, as you said very perfectly, to be relevant and to show that everything is working, you got to go win.
Yeah, and it would build momentum. I mean, that's the big thing. If they lose in the last second again to Tennessee and then they roll off 4 straight wins, then it wasn't a must win because they're right where you needed to be anyway.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
But
yeah,
it would look like this would be a good jumping off point for the season to really get rolling, and you build some of that positive momentum you're going to need as the season gets tougher, as you face the Bengals twice and the end of the season stuff.
Well, and as we keep talking about, I mean, it's the specter of not finishing against Baltimore is still hanging in everybody's craw. I want to hit you with one other thing, both you guys, about the defensive side of the football. I thought that maybe, and if you disagree, please say so. I'm a little disappointed in Ataba Rubin so far. I thought maybe it might be better served for Phil Taylor to go back over the nose and maybe have his, what I felt is his best capabilities and best skills of where he's played the best, to be in that position again for him. Scotty, do you think there's been any discussion about that, or was it something the Browns look at? And how about you as you study the Browns defensively, giving up 150 per game on the ground?
Well, let me start with, from a personnel standpoint, it looks like they should be able to stop the run. I think they have the guys up front. I like Taylor and Rube and Desmond Bryant and Billy Wendell and John Hughes. Those are all guys that look like they should be able to.
Right.
But when you saw them go against Baltimore's heavy personnel, they just weren't able to do it. And I don't know how much of that scheme, I mean, Matt could talk better of that, but you know, if it's a scheme, the personnel looks to me like it should be able to stop them. And as far as flopping those guys back to where they were last year, we talked to defensive line coach Anthony Weaver last week, and he said they haven't even considered it. So they're going to stick with where they are. And my thinking is that they like the explosion of Phil Taylor. I think they envision Phil Taylor as a better pass rusher, and maybe he can do that better from the end as opposed to straight up at the nose.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I was an advocate as well, though, of changing something, a shuffling of some sort. And again, if the coach has knocked it, obviously we're not going to see that. But that was one of the things that I kind of highlighted going into the bye that I wouldn't mind seeing. And it's not a wholesale trade, meaning you're going to get Taylor playing an entire game at the nose and Rubin out at the 5 or the 3 technique. But it's one of those things where in a package or in a scenario where Phil Taylor's penetration and his playmaking ability at the nose tackle position bodes better for us than that cog run-stopping take-two mentality that Ataba Rubin has. So That's something that I was looking forward for. But again, if the coach has knocked it, it's not something we're going to see now. Right. You know, maybe it's something that comes into play later in the season.
Yeah, that sounds about right, that they're going to stick. And I don't think they want to make any rash decisions. You know, it's only been three games. I know that the run defense hasn't been where it needs to be. But Mike Pettine seems to think it's a lot of little things and not one big scheme fix that would help.
Okay, Scott Petrak joining us. Can we all agree, though, again, they're going in to see the 30th ranked offense in the National Football League. This team puts up only 15 points a game. Charlie Whitehurst quarterbacked at Indianapolis. They got throttled. Jake Locker has thrown four picks in the three football games he's played. They're 29th in passing. It said they only average. So, I mean, shouldn't this be a realistic that if the Browns defensively are going to get healthy, I mean, get well, not physically, but being able to do and come as advertised with some of the things, what they're lining up against opponent-wise, they should look to be able to get off to a real fast start, Scott, and be able to impose their will defensively, should they not?
Yeah, I mean, that's what all the numbers would suggest, for sure. There's no doubt about it. And to me, it starts with the quarterback. If it's Jake Locker, which Mike Pettine expects it to be and Wisenhunt expects him to practice today, he doesn't strike fear into you, right? So that means you can put that extra guy in the box and you can say, okay, make Jake Locker beat us, which should help the run game because you can pay more attention to it. Dante Whitner can be down toward the line of scrimmage or whatever it takes. Tennessee has some guys at running back, and they all have pretty good averages this year. Sean Green and Bishop Sankey, the rookie, and Dexter McCluster, who adds that change of pace and can scare a defense. So they have some pieces in the run game. You just can't let them get into that flow of running the ball, which starts with, going back to the quarterback. If you take that away and you put all the pressure on Jake Locker, I just don't have any faith, if I'm a Tennessee guy, that he's going to be the guy that beat you. So make him beat you if you're the Browns.
Yeah, a one-dimensional Tennessee Titan team is a team that's going to get beat by 10-plus points by the Cleveland Browns, playing our best football. And the one other point to make, Michael, is I truly feel that this is a confidence-boosting type of football game. We got to go on the road. The only thing to make this any prettier is if it happened at First Energy Stadium. But the fact we got to take the show on the road, we're going to go play our best football coming out of bye. Again, no wholesale changes, just fine-tuning and tweaks, perfecting our craft. Justin Gilbert perfecting technique. Barkevious Mingo working on his dropping angles. but go out and play a solid football game. You know, and I think for the offense, our expectations are high to run the football, which of course sets up Brian Hoyer having another successful day, not turning the football over. Getting Jordan Cameron back into the swing of things is something I'm looking forward. And then I think defensively, huge confidence boost. There's no guy on the Tennessee Titans roster. The only guy in my eyes, and having played with him in San Francisco, is Delanie Walker. He's got an opportunity to play extremely well in those zones in the open field. He's a very, very tough one-on-one matchup against a linebacker or safety. And he can also, too, take the ball the distance. Otherwise, Kendall Wright, Nate Washington, Sean Green, Sankey, yes, because he's a physical runner, but yet still, he's still a rookie. So, overall, if we put our best foot forward and come out of this bye and come out fast, we can put these guys to bed very early.
Seems to be the prevailing attitude. Scott Petrak, a few more minutes with us right here. Know you're enjoying Scotty. Make sure you check him out on Twitter, @ScottPetrak. And always, as the guy who brings you the best of the Browns in the National Football League in the Elyria Chronicle Telegram. All right, last 48 hours, I just went on a little bit of a filibuster here. I've been absolutely... Scotty, where do you come out on this? Fans, if I didn't know better, I think fans would want to cut Ben Tate, if not have him standing on the sidelines. Scotty's laughing. I've been absolutely amazed that, we all love what Crowell and West have done in the first couple of weeks. But again, I mean, let's be realistic here. Should not Ben Tate go right back to assuming, as Wilbur Montgomery said, the feature back role of this football team until proven otherwise?
Well, I know you feel strongly about this, Reg. I'm kind of surprised it took this long to get there. I agree. I agree with you. I think it's Ben Tate's job. I think he showed enough in Houston to make the Browns go after him, and he showed enough in training camp in the preseason to make me think he was a guy for this job. And I think he helps you in pass protection. He helps you and throwing the ball to the backs that the rookies are still, trying to get their feet under them in those regards. to me, he's a guy, and he gives you that veteran quality, and you have to go back to him. I think that's a no-brainer. I think the interesting thing is, to me, Crowell has jumped Terrence West on my depth chart. And if you're going to play two backs, which I think that's all you can play, and Ben Tate agreed with me yesterday, then it becomes Isaiah Crowell is your second guy. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. And Terrence West is a good third running back, and I'm sure he has a bright future. But just from the small sample size that we've seen in 3 weeks, I think Crowell has a higher ceiling than Terrence West. And while I'm giving the job back to Tate and let him run with it, it wouldn't shock me if by week 15 or week 16, it's Isaiah Crowell's job, just because I think his ceiling might even be higher than Ben Tate's.
I completely agree there. Again, it's, I also said, just so you know, Scotty, because I am want to, emote, but it's a production business.
Sure.
Now, as Scott said, yes, in a few weeks, if Ben Tate's production level dips, then his reps are going to dip with that. That's just the bottom line. But my point was, he just turned 26 years old.
Right.
This is not Willis McGahee. People have been like, this is a guy, some decrepit guy running back in the rocking chair. That his career average is almost 4.9, and he went for 5.4 last year. And Browns fans were thrilled to have him back in March.
Well, and his last run was, 26, 28 yards?
I mean,
that's the last run he had for this team. So people's memories are so short. And I think that if Ben Tate's healthy on Sunday, it won't take long to see why he should be that number one.
And he may not be. That's another thing.
Be.
Now, he was limited today.
Yeah, but Penn expects him to go full one of the next 2 days.
Exactly. And, Reg, just to make that one point, and Scott, you as well, and you can weigh in if you so choose, but the one thing that I think we have to also be ready for is when it comes to these running backs is it carries or is it reps?
Reps.
You know, if there's 70 reps in a football game or 65 reps in a football game, mm-hmm. You're going to put the ball in the air 30 times. That means you're going to run the ball 30, 35 times, prospectively, okay?
Sure.
So is Ben Tate going to get – what percentage of carries is Ben Tate going to get versus what percentage of plays is Ben Tate going to be, on the football field, which bodes extremely well for Ben Tate's full body of work. The fact that he can catch the ball out of the backfield. He's great in screens. He can get out in checkdowns. He's better in pass protection. And yet he's a very adequate runner in this zone scheme offense. So that might mean Crowell might get more carries.
Yeah.
But is he going to get more reps? So that's something that we have to weigh in on as well, because then you've got a full balanced offense.
No, that's a great point. I could see him being 50-50 carries, and yet Ben Tate plays two-thirds of
the time.
That's
my point.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I couldn't agree more with you guys on that. All right, Scotty, as we wind it up here, real quick, is this another strong to winning performance in your mind Sunday against the Tennessee defense from Brian Hoyer? And does it lead to a win for this football team? Is Scotty, 1-7, 1-7, 1-7. That's
right.
2011, 12, and 13 for the Browns on the road. Now, again, Hoyer had one of them last September in Minneapolis.
Sure. Sure.
The day Josh Gordon and he were in together. So, where are you with Brian Hoyer in terms of now going forward out of the bye week? And, do they win on the road?
Yeah, you know what? I think Brian's 1-1 starting on the road. He lost the one Pittsburgh in the opener, and he played well in the second half. I think they do win this game. I love that they're coming off the bye. That doesn't always mean you're going to win. Atlanta came off the long 10 days, and then they wound up losing. But I like Brian Hoyer. I like where he's at. And I know it's still only been six starts with the Browns, but I've gotten to the point with him where I trust him, and I think he's a quarterback that can lead a team to the playoffs. And, not that he won't get worse. I mean, there's obviously that opportunity, but I just don't think that's going to happen. I've seen too much of him. I think he's too smart. I think when he's accurate, he's really, really good. And we saw the accuracy on display the last time we saw him, 14 straight against Baltimore. He's thrown it as well as I've seen him throw it. And all the intangibles he always has, right? He's going to be smart. He's going to know what the defense is going to do. He's going to know what the offense is going to do. It's if he can throw the ball where he wants to, which he didn't always do in the preseason, and he struggled with early against Pittsburgh, but I think he's found a rhythm, and I think he's found confidence, and I think it's his team. It feels to me like the first 3 weeks, what they did was they showed the whole world that they could compete, and Brian Hoyer showed his team and the rest of the league that he belongs to be this team's starting quarterback for the rest of the season. And we're not talking about Johnny Football anymore. We're talking about Brian Hoyer. And I just think it sets up very well for him to have a nice stretch of football playing against Tennessee and the defenses he's going to face. And I would be surprised if he doesn't take this opportunity and run with it.
I completely agree with you, and I do too. I think the decision-making of Brian Hoyer will keep us in football games, whereas the gunslinging aspect of former quarterbacks has hurt us in football games. So, that also too being said, there will come a time this football season with Brian Hoyer as our quarterback. He's got to make those throws to win a football game. He can't just play safe and not, I don't want to throw the pick. There's sometimes you got to fit into those windows in a football game and make that play, which we did in the New Orleans game, you know, that have to be made. So we've seen him do it. We need to see him do it consistently.
You're right. That's a given. But feel good, Browns Nation. Both Petrak and Wilhelm say hear, hear, affirmative. Hoyer will keep playing well, and the Browns are going to get that first road win of the year to match their win totals on the road in each of the last three seasons. God, let's hope this is not the only one we're talking about. Scotty, always a pleasure.
Thanks,
appreciate
Scott.
The knowledge, wisdom. Have fun this weekend, and we'll see if all this prognosticating comes true.
Thanks, fellas.
All right, we'll visit next week. Make sure you check him out on Twitter. A terrific follow, at Scott Petrak. Elyria Chronicle Telegram, of course, does an outstanding job with the Browns in the National Football League. All right, don't go away. We got to dip into the hashtag mailbag at Browns_daily, at Matt Wilhelm 57, at Michael Regai. A lot to go. Don't go away. We'll do that, and maybe have some surprises too. Who knows? That's his Cleveland Brown Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, rolls on right here on ESPN Cleveland. Do not go away.